baseball is full of suck
right now.
And not only in this town, but across the country.
That's where our game, and I'd say our because I love it so much. And he's going to be dead.
Great, but I need 9 inches.
The Cubs.
Dumb. He sounds dumb.
But that will not derail our baseball conversation.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Those glorious moments edited together by Robbie Triano, who had once had a career perhaps as a afternoon producer, now has derailed that.
That job is taken. Robbie, you back off.
But I made the Waldron cut sheet. Come on.
He did make the Shane Waldron cut sheet. But we have Shane Reardon and damn happy about it.
He's Matt Spiegel. He's joining me in the studio instead of on the guest hotline that is normally presented by Circus Sports Illinois. And he walks in. Ostensibly, we're going to talk baseball.
Yes, sir.
Romanticized baseball. And I will backtrack for our audience last week. Most of them were probably waking and baking. They forgot what I did last week and why Matt's here. But he walks in today.
Yes, sir.
And he hands me a hockey puck. But not just any hockey puck. All right. This is your story. You get to tell it.
This is a puck that was bought 44 years ago today in the rink in Lake Placid by my parents, who were there for the Olympics, and this puck has a sticker on it, which has remained adhesively
it's
secure.
Remarkable.
13th Olympic Winter Games, Lake Placid, 1980. So they drove up in a van. I showed you the picture with three other couples. So there's eight of them in a van, and they rented a house by Lake Placid and said, let's just go to the Olympics.
Their version of the Big Chill.
Yeah, essentially. It drove up from Jersey together. And the tickets for all the events was like in a lottery. So they did the lottery, and at one point they saw a bunch of different stuff, saw the luge, saw some speed skating, and they were like, oh, we got a Sunday hockey game. That's great. Sunday morning hockey game. Turns out to be the gold medal game against Finland.
Right. Which
was not technically the gold medal game.
It was not the gold medal game.
It was the last game of the round robin or something.
Correct. There were four teams in there, and the U.S. played Sweden. They all have to play each other. So in the round robin, the last game happened to be the U.S. and Sweden, or U.S. and Finland.
Uh-huh.
And the U.S. is down 2-1. And the U.S., had they lost to Finland, would not have medaled. The miracle wouldn't be a miracle. Wouldn't be a movie. Herb Brooks' speech would not be the greatest in sports history. They had to beat Finland, and they were down 2-1.
Wow.
After a period, and Herb Brooks, in a very non-Disney way, went into the dressing room and told his guys, if you lose this game, you'll take it to your bleeping grave.
Best.
To your bleeping grave. And then he left the dressing room, and then they took Finland's head off. You didn't see that miracle because it's a Disney movie. But your parents are there. This puck walks into the studio today.
Man. Yeah, I mean, like, look, there's a lot of things that your parents can teach you or not teach you through their actions. But they have always been... Or they were, anyway. My mom is gone. My dad is 92, 91 right now. Or he's about to be 91. But anyway, he's 90. But anyway, like if you want to do something and it is conceivable, do it. Like if you have, especially if it's an event of some kind, a sporting event or some kind of historical event, like make it happen. So I appreciate that lesson for sure.
And they, because I got into this. This whole baseball romanticism thing last week.
Yeah.
And this leads me, this is the connection of what your parents may or may not have had in shaping your sports.
100%.
And the sports you chose or how they chose to lead you to it and make your decisions.
I got there myself through a few different things. My dad loved baseball, and there was a lot of romanticism in his childhood about baseball. And there's a whole backstory and an origin story there. But really, he loved history. And so, like, as we're talking about that spirit that he had, I remember one day we were watching TV, and it was the 100th anniversary of the Brooklyn Bridge. And he thought the Brooklyn Bridge was amazing because of John Roebling and the suspension technology. Mm-hmm. And we're in New Jersey, and he's watching. He's like, they're celebrating. There's going to be fireworks. I got to go. And he got in the car and drove to Brooklyn to be there for the 100th anniversary of the Brooklyn Bridge.
Of course, you got to go.
Yeah, I got to go.
Yeah, it's like
but he connected so... The history of baseball and the history of everything. Like, there's, I mean, when I think about why I'm romantic about it, it's the timelessness of it. It is the connection to the 1880s or the 1910s or the 1950s or our childhood. It's this impossible timelessness that this sport has above all because it's changed the least. Because you look out and the athletes have changed. And a few of the rules have changed, but you look at the stats and some of them are new, but there's so much that's freaking timeless and forever connected to my dad crying about the 1946 World Series as a kid. You know, it's like, it's all just interconnected generation to generation. And that's the key to the romanticism.
Two things jumped out at me. Last week I had an author on, Gary Sarnoff. He wrote a book about the 1924 Senators. You're going, why? Why is he doing Chicago radio? Well, he's a Chicago author, and he wrote about this, and the 1924 Senators were a team I learned about in two ways. I learned about Walter Johnson and Bucky Harris through Strat-O-Matic and Lawrence Ritter's book, The Glory of Their Times. I read that book 1,000 times. It was mostly about players before 1920. And what he had done was, a wonderful, inspired idea, if you've ever tried to write anything, he found players, those who he could talk to in 1960 who had played before 1920.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was Goose Goslin, who played on that Senators team. So for me, that tied everything together. My baseball romanticism was that book, those people knowing Stanley Kovalevsky and Chief Meyer and names that are not talked about now. Poor Fred Snodgrass, if you're a baseball historian. And Strat-O-Matic, playing modern, but also learning the historic teams that they had from the 62 Mets, the 27 Yankees, the 24 Senators were one of them. The 1950 Phillies, the Whiz Kids, the 54 Giants, because I loved Willie Mays, the 61 Yankees, those kind of historic teams.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked that of Costas, and he did. He was a Strat-O-Matic baby, and he certainly read Lawrence Ritter's book, and I asked that of Gary Sarnoff. So I'll ask you, it doesn't have to be Strat-O-Matic or that book, but there are seminal moments, think touchstones for me, in shaping my baseball romanticism. And I apologize to you last week on the air.
Why?
For treading on your baseball romantic.
Can't we all be there together?
Yes, we can.
And we often are, which is the beauty of it.
Yes, that's what baseball is, a shared experience.
Oh, yes. High-fiving strangers at the ballpark is a top five life experience.
That's true.
For me.
Yeah.
That is top five.
So what was it? Are there moments you go back to that you could shape that you, because this time of year, pitchers and catchers report doesn't do anything for me. It's not the four greatest words. You don't have four greatest words if one of them isn't bacon. That's the way I look at it. It's got to be bacon. So that's not it.
It's funny. The first thing that comes to mind is my dad bringing me to see the Big Red Machine against the Phillies at Veterans Stadium in Philly sometime in the 70s. And Pete Rose scored. I remember Pete Rose rounding third and his helmet coming off and then him sliding into home head first. And the place went nuts, and I knew he was on the opposite team, but the place still went nuts. And my dad said, "That's what he does," or something like that. And I knew that there was a whole world of context. I'm getting chills thinking about it. There's a whole world of context and backstory to this guy and that team. I knew the team was great because they had beaten the Red Sox, and my brother cried when they beat the Red Sox in 75, but I was too young to experience that. But I knew, so it must have been 77 or something like that. But anyway, I just knew there was a tremendous amount that I didn't know, but I still felt it.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever I didn't know was part of what I felt. And as we're talking about it, man, that curiosity to know as much about it as possible has never left me. So I feel more than I know at that moment, and I want to know why I'm feeling what I'm feeling. So that's romantic as I think about it.
I'm totally with you, because there's more. Baseball is so, the way we grew up with baseball was transistor radios, right?
Mm-hmm.
I did anyways. Mm-hmm. And in fact, because the Dodgers were always in the world. I grew up in L.A. The Dodgers were always in the World Series. And so Vinny was in my ear in Temple. It was always during the high holidays. So yeah. I had a transistor radio in my shirt, my suit.
Yeah.
And the earbuds snaked up into my ear. And everybody was listening to Vinny tell us during the high holidays what was going on. Uh-huh. For those less fortunate, the rabbi comes out after one of the breaks and says, for those of you who are interested, the Dodgers are leading 4-1 after two.
and you're like, I already know.
Yeah, that's right. So that part of it, of listening to that game, is about stories. If you're listening to a Hall of Fame broadcaster, it's generally somebody who tells stories.
Oh, yeah, no, that's the thing. Well, and that's like the gift of my dad's love for the game is the stories. And I'd have to share what he was doing. He, after Enos Slaughter scored from first to beat the Red Sox in 46 because Johnny Pesky held the ball. But the truth is, it was Leon Culberson in center who was playing for Dom DiMaggio, who was hurt. So Culberson had to hit the relay man. Dom would have just thrown it right home and Slaughter wouldn't have scored, is what the people who know say. But my dad went right to bar mitzvah practice and was crying at bar mitzvah practice. And the rabbi was asking him, what are you crying about? And he says, well, the Red Sox lost the World Series. The rabbi was like, I don't understand. The rabbi did not get it, why it mattered. So yeah, like, and
well, in,
so that
in
story
LA, is, they knew because of Sandy Koufax. Sure, he wasn't pitching on Yom Kippur.
There you go. There
so
you go.
They knew all that. See, that's one of the things, the stories are great. This is what, so let me ask you this, you've seen and been part of and succeeded in sports talk radio in a town where it can be very fierce. It can be, and it can be feisty. You're almost expected to be that way. Mm-hmm. And yet, one of the joys you and I have, whether it's baseball or hockey or both or whatever, it's the story, which doesn't polarize people. Sometimes you got to vote Justin Fields or Caleb Williams. You choose. And you almost... Sometimes I feel compelled to do some kind of polarizing thing. And last week with Bob Costas, it was, let's talk.
Oh, yeah.
He talked about Game 7 of 2016. MLB Network did that, and they had both managers there, which is just terrific. And I
have it DVR'd. I've been afraid to watch it, and I didn't. I haven't watched it.
Spoiler alert, nobody will tell you who won.
No, I know I'm going to get mad all over again at Joe, and I'm sure that Joe is going to continue not to point the thumb even a little. And I know the damage that did to the next several years of Cubdom, his inability to point the thumb. I know that. So I don't want to bask in that again, frankly.
Okay, so as an entertainment vehicle.
Yeah, but anyway, but your question, what you were saying about your question, my life Monday through Friday and during like afternoon sports talk radio and like the greater, broader conversational realm of sports discourse is feisty and is like, all right, well, what's going to get people going and whatever. And also just like pushing back at each other. And it's not the best place for simply stories and simple baseball appreciation and detail and context. So, but that's sometimes it is and sometimes we do it. But thank God I have Hit and Run on Sundays, which starts on March 17th.
Oh, and happy St. Patrick's Day to you baseball fans.
There you go. So Sunday morning, March 17th. And thank God I have the podcast about play-by-play that I started last year that I'm going to do again this year.
I think that's great. And I'm biased because I like you as an interviewer. I like you as a participant. And I think it's great because I love announcers because they brought me baseball. Vinny brought me baseball.
Yeah, man.
They were, Dick Enberg was my Angels announcer. Vinny was my Dodgers announcer. And that is the way we were shaped, listening to these guys.
Yeah, for sure. And those stories. And they'll, you know, it's, I mean, Bob Costas gave me an hour last year and we had this unbelievable conversation. As like, you're talking about Strat-O-Matic. I had John Miller on last year from the Giants. His house was in the rotation for all his friends who played Strat-O-Matic. They'd go to different houses and have home games. But his house was the best because his mom put out the buffet spread. His mom used to put out the charcuterie. Or it might have been his friend's house. One of their houses was the best. But like, so as you say Strat-O-Matic, I'm thinking about John Miller. And he used to sing the anthem before their Strat-O-Matic games.
Say what?
John Miller used to sing the national anthem before he and his kid friends used to play their Stratomatic games.
Now that is, that's mirroring real life.
Come on.
And the thing about Stratomatic was this, as much as I for a while there, I held the belief that if I love baseball stories and the way things happen, I couldn't love metrics. And I realized the fallacy in that. And it, I've come to terms with, okay, this all has to be measured in some way, but it need all needs to be considered. Stratomatic was the introduction of metrics. It was probabilities.
Sure.
Because it was a dice game.
Sure.
And I didn't realize that until, I don't know, last week that I hit upon it. And I thought, oh, and again, something else I failed to learn, which is not surprising because I didn't dive into metrics and I wasn't head. Wait, there's new numbers. I already know ERA. I know batting average. Uh-huh. Like, oh no, now what are you doing to me?
Yeah.
That, so I resisted it at first, but Stratomatic was it. It was the way you can teach people math without teaching them math.
Telling them
you're teaching them math.
Guess what? Some of the metrics can be romantic. They can be.
They can.
Yeah. It's
certain, share with me, certain you ones of silver them, tongue devil.
Because some of them are quantifiable scouting. And some of it is just stuff that scouts have written down forever, for decades and decades. And now they got numbers for it. You know, and it's like, so really, and
it's not just numbers though, the perspective, the in context compared to,
yeah,
like OPS plus OPS doesn't mean anything. Well, what do the great ones do? And then you have a bar, then you have the perspective.
Yeah, but guess what? BABIP can be romantic because BABIP is like, man, that's a hang with him. Like, you hang with them when you hit it hard. Oh boy, that should have been a hit.
Sorry.
You know, it's got a hit probability. I mean, if Hawk knew what hit probability was, he'd be pissed off. But if he actually took the time, he'd be like, oh yeah, it's a hang with him. Sure, I got it.
BABIP is part of the law firm on Parks and Rec.
Yes,
BABIP and Vorp, which is Pacoda.
It is brilliant. But yeah, there's, you know, they can be because there's context to the right stuff. But like the romanticism can get you in trouble though too, and I know it gets me in trouble. For instance, I have been lost in the romantic possibility of a perfect Thursday evening at the new Sox ballpark over at the 78. Because on a Thursday evening, when you finish your work day downtown and you're like, I'm going to hop on a divvy bike and ride 2 miles to the ballpark,
mm-hmm.
or I'm going to hop on a water taxi and ride my way up there. And I'll get there a little early, but I'll have a beer at one of these four different new bars and restaurants that are right there. I'll have a sandwich and sit on the river's edge, and then I'll walk in and go to a ball game. And oh, by the way, this is going to be a much healthier and better place for this team that has struggled at times to live its next 30 years. And then we'll have two healthy teams in this town. Who has that? Angels aren't healthy.
Mm-mm.
Mets and Yankees. Good night, everybody.
You could look at the Mets last year and go, not so healthy.
Yeah, but right, you could look at any year.
But
you know,
from ownership on down, there's a willingness to spend. And
so I want that. I mean, one of my joys is getting to talk baseball in a two-team town. I don't want this to not be a two-team town.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's the thing. I know as well as anyone the horrible misdeeds of Jerry Reinsdorf, baseball owner. I know them. I can recite them. I have. I can tell you how stupid and insular and crippling decision after decision after decision has been to the health of their baseball operations. Mm-hmm. Just awful, right?
Yeah.
I still want this ballpark. You know, overall, and I don't want the state to pay all of it. I want him to chip in a big bunch, and his first ask here is grotesque, and I hope they'll get there to a middle ground of some kind, because that's what usually happens. Even the Ricketts has got tax breaks, you know, that people don't remember or want to discuss. Like, usually you get to a halfway point. So anyway, I can talk about all that stuff, and I've learned all that stuff, but it's so freaking joyless to learn that stuff, but you need to when you do what we do for a living. But anyway, I can't pretend that my romantic visualization of that ballpark isn't the first thing I think of when I think about the possibility of a stadium.
Well, it would be, having lived through the fact that they went, I don't want to say cookie cutter, that was more like
100% cookie cutter.
But more, I go, yeah.
Steve, you got to, do you know that the Camden Yards?
Yes.
You know that story?
Yes.
My God, if anybody doesn't know, they showed Larry Lucchino and the Orioles Comiskey Park and said, let's do this for Camden Yards, the new Comiskey, the guaranteed rate. Let's do this. And Larry Lucchino said, that's boring. That's awful. That has nothing. I need nooks. I need crannies. Take it away. Bring me something. Bring me something different. And they said, okay.
Bring me Boog's Barbecue.
Right. And then Reinsdorf called and they're like, hey, Jerry, look at this. Yeah. And he's like, yep, let's do it.
Right.
Let's do it.
Because the Reds and Phillies played in something like that in 1970.
Folks, that's a true story.
Yeah. I love the idea of, because it makes it more important. It makes more important what we do. I don't separate that.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. I mean, I can't separate. I can't really be honest. If it makes what we do more important and sports matters here, then I'm all for it. But I don't reach into my pocket.
Yeah.
When you,
I get it.
What if instead of shuffling Fonzie in his leather jacket through Springfield?
Oh, your Jordan question that you had at the beginning? Oh, my God.
What if it was him?
Can you imagine? Like,
I'm asking you, what difference do you think it would make publicly and to legislators?
They wouldn't have had to privately fund the United Center. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's while he was a player. So that wouldn't happen. But yeah, no, it is a massive failure to not have turned that relationship into a decades long partnership.
Yeah.
Magic Johnson has gotten things done for the Lakers and the Dodgers.
And he's bought and sold pieces of the Lakers, depending on what else he was doing.
The Dodgers have used Magic to get a ton of things approved. Yeah, absolutely. Let alone the basketball pennants that the Bulls still have to pay because Michael was pissed and everybody who loved Michael was pissed. And then Dwayne Wade grew up pissed.
Mm-hmm.
And he told everybody after him to stay pissed.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around. A lot of game of operator going around.
A horrific bungling of having an all-time great as your potential partner.
We have a texter who let us know that everyone cried during bar mitzvah practice. Just so you know.
This Hof Torah is ridiculous.
Another texter decided this was hitting suckage and is loving it.
Yeah.
And the whatever Jordan did as an owner, he's still Michael Jordan. I mean, he's the reason they're still selling out.
Yeah.
He's not there. He hasn't been there for 25 years. He's not there.
People and still want to see the statue. My nephew came to town 10 years ago and said, can we go to the statue? Yeah,
can
sure.
Can we go to the statue?
10 years ago. He didn't want to go to a game, but we went to a game because I'm like, well, yeah, we'll go to a game and we'll go see the statue. But yeah.
And that, I don't know how big of a ego fight on either side it was. Neither of them really wants to reach into their own pocket. Jerry's very generous with two things that we know of. One is supporting his supporters, right? He's very loyal that way. And he's very... He reaches into his pocket for a lot of political donations, depending how he's going to play that game. Michael prefers to play with other people's money, unless it's blackjack.
Yeah.
Then he'll play with his own. But I don't know how it would have gone and what it was. But as you said, a failure not to, why wouldn't you, what would it be worth to you to have Michael Jordan as your hood ornament?
Sure, Jerry's stubborn. Maybe you've noticed. here's the thing about Jerry, though, and this I know this to be true from people who are close to him and have been close to him and remain close to him. There is a baseball romantic underneath all of his, you know, ruthlessness.
Back
it's
when
there.
He talked to me, I took part in those conversations.
Right? You know it's there.
Yep.
I mean, you know, the way that he reacted when Konerko handed him the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and just all of it. Nobody in his family gives a crap about the White Sox. As soon as he dies, they're all going to sell it. I mean, which is so perfectly illustrated by Michael Reinsdorf sitting there with Jerry as he gave that interview to Cranes and not saying a word.
Mm-hmm.
Not a word.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so, I mean, there is that kid who loved Eddie Stanky and watched the Dodgers go away. That origin story is real.
Yeah.
And there's a part of him that does want to leave the White Sox in a better place with all the stadium and all the stuff, but there's just so much ruthless business ugliness that covers it all up that people just can't even believe that part of Jerry still exists.
But if you knew his origin story of as a lawyer and as a man who could buy, sell, cut deals, and do all that, you have to be ruthless. You have to just eat whatever.
Amen.
He's got a nice sense of humor. He does. This goes back to when he was talking to me and not using 12-letter words with a lot of C's and K's to describe me.
Uh-huh.
So it was He was, yeah, you're thinking of
crank killer.
So he was that, have to be that ruthless.
Yeah.
But you can also be that.
That's him.
Show the charm and schmooze people.
Well, yeah. And
that's what he's trying to do now.
And actually like stuff, because he does actually like some stuff. Like, here's the thing. He tried to win with this rebuild here that just happened and then fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to win. He had a payroll of, what, 190? For him, that's like really trying to win.
Oh, yeah. That's Steve Cohen level.
For Jerry?
Yes.
Oh, my God. He was terrible at it. He was horrific at it. He hired people, then didn't let them do their jobs, and then he shoved Tony La Russa down everybody's throat and harpooned the whole thing.
Yes, that was an awful part of the way, if you were a Sox fan, and Rick Hahn's face and voice told you that on the introductory press conference. You didn't even need the DUI and the mugshot.
Yeah, yeah, and that was Jerry's heart. That was, he actually thought it was the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. He thought he was going to win. He thought he was going to and have it with his guy. It's a vanity project. It's a vanity project.
Well, that's what he admitted the White Sox be. When I'm old, what am I going to do? I don't play golf. I don't play pinochle. What else am I going to do?
Hey, man, people don't hate their vanity projects. They love their vanity projects.
It's true. He's Matt Spiegel. Can you stick around for another segment
as long as
you're here?
Let me see.
What are you allowed to do? Let's check.
No, you know what? I can't.
You can't?
I love you, but I can't.
He's got a bigger name on the other line.
Yeah, and it's my wife. That's the one. I got to go.
Can I ask you this question before you go there?
Yes.
When we come back, I have random Chelios stuff that is just all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
This is from the WB Club, and it may be giving away something, the Wake and Bake Club. Elizabeth Warren told Marijuana Moment her blunt rotation, and it included Snoop Dogg. Do you have a blunt rotation? Would you have an ideal blunt rotation?
Blunt rotation.
She had four people. Snoop was one of them. The whole idea of Elizabeth Warren and Snoop.
Oh my God! So the blunt rotation is people I'd wanna have the blunt with.
Here,
smoke weed every day.
And we had
alive or dead.
I would say alive. It'd be very, very hard to do. You know.
God, boy, that's fun.
Okay, you can get back to me on the next time you stop in the studio.
Yeah, I'll get back to you.
That's good. Whenever your wife
Sorry,
lets
I got to
you.
Run. You're the best.
I don't, you. Baseball romanticist. I'm glad you stopped by and did this. I'm very grateful for that. You did not have to do that.
I know, but I was in the neighborhood and my wife was working, and then when she's done, I'm going to go get her, and now she's done.
Okay, so you were there. You lived through 1976 Game 6, and you lived through 2016 Game 7.
Yeah.
I asked this to Costas. I'll ask it to you. Which game was better? Which is the greatest game of all time?
2016 game 7. That's number one. I mean,
despite your Sox tendencies.
Oh, well, by then my Cubs tendencies had taken over. Remember, I've been here since 92, you know? It's like, so yeah, the Cubs, and I knew so much about that team. I covered that team. And then that series, I was at four games as media and two as a fan for the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
I'm down the right field line watching that whole thing, watching John Lester warm up for 2.5 innings until he's just soft tossing in the bullpen. And then Madden finally goes to him in a dirty inning. Rah! See, I'm angry all over again.
Yeah,
but no. The twists and turns of that game.
Another texter said, shared your angst and watched it. So perhaps that would be an idea not go back. Got Matt all over again.
Yeah, Steve, I'll do this anytime. We'll do it again. Thank you.
I appreciate that. He's Matt Spiegel. Afternoon show, Parkins and Spiegel, 2 to 6. And we never got to the town hall you did. I will rhapsodize about that. Oh, there's another thing about Costas that you will appreciate. The first time you met Howard Cosell, and this is in the late 70s, early 80s, and Bob Costas was always America's sports teenager, right? And so when he was young, he really looked young. And Cosell says, you're the young man who rhapsodizes about the infield fly rule.
Yes, he is.
And here we are,
and
rhapsodizing about BABIP.
Whose legacy is aging better?
There you go. He's Matt Spiegel. Great. Thank you for being here.
A pleasure.
And we'll take a break when we come back. Like I said, I have a bunch of random Chelios notes and stories and things. He's having his jersey retired. Or is he having Brent Seabrook's jersey retired? Matt Spiegel and his puck are going home. He's taking his puck and he's going home. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Now Cummins works against Babbage in the corner. And a couple of others lock up. It squirts loose as Savard walks in front of the net. Center Chelios right in. Hawks win! Hawks win again! Chris Chelios in overtime after the Savard setup. Chelios again with a great read, sensing the play developing, found the open ice. Savard found him. Hawks are into the Western Conference Finals.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Legend upon legend upon legend. Pat Foley, a legend, calling Chris Chelios' goal. A legend, calling Dennis Savard's assist. A legend. I think that was 95 against Vancouver, game four. The Hawks went to Vancouver in that series, up 2-0, one of the first two games in Chicago. In those two games, in Vancouver, they ended with Chris Chelios scoring the goal in overtime, back-to-back OT winners. And the thing about, and I can't remember which game it was, and this is one of the Chelios random things I wanted to talk about. That's when we found out he was ambidextrous. I never knew. What happened? Cheated in from the right point, had the puck, and then all of a sudden is taking a slap shot or a snapshot from the left side, and ball game all over, and we're sitting there, the press corps, me, Tim Sassone, Brian Hanley. The hell just happened? None of us knew he was ambidextrous. And by the way, he was playing a part of a season and a half, 15 months, without a ligament. Missing had a snapped knee ligament. He decided he's going to play on because he was Chris Chelios. That's the way he did things. So they're retiring his jersey tomorrow. He is Chris Chelios, a regular on the Mully and Haw show, and you'll hear him, I believe it's Thursdays. You'll hear him every Thursday. Sometimes you've heard Wayne Gretzky on it. Wayne Gretzky will be there tomorrow, he's scheduled to be, or he's... Michael Jordan is supposed to be there, too. Like, he'll show up for a hockey thing at the United Center, but not a Bulls thing. So...
Is this the greatest, togetherness or greatest meeting of the best athletes of all time? That's incredible. For Chris Chelios.
No, it would be just simply with Shohei taking a shower. That would be the greatest meeting of athletes of all time. But it's not just Chris Chelios, because... he knows everybody. And as Speaks was saying on the way out, he knows everybody, and you're dealing with Eddie Vedder to Wayne Gretzky to obviously Jeremy Roenick, and the variety of people he knows and who know him, his Malibu mafia. He had a place in Malibu, and that's worked out, and he was... Talk about indefatigable. I mean, he played till almost, I think he was 48 when he last played a game. That's remarkable. That's why he's in the Yager conversation, a Gordie Howe conversation. The retire is his jersey number 7. And as I said earlier, and I'll make the case, he is the greatest American hockey player. Eddie O was on Mully and Haw earlier in the week and said Patrick Kane is. He said Chelly is the best American defenseman. And there were people who already took issue with that with me and on the text line and said, no, Leach is. Well, no, he's not. Thank you. Thanks for playing our game. So here's why Chelios over Kane. For what all the offensive wizardry that Kane has and the goals and the magnificent, the talents, the ability to play center from the wing, the way he passes and the way he can shoot. Chelios played both ends of the ice. Kane doesn't. Chelios was on the penalty kill. We saw what happened when they tried that with Kane. It went away from that real quick. They both played the power play. But you got Chelios on both special teams, and he's playing in the number one pair, and he's playing both ends of the ice. And for those of you who remember Duncan Keith, that's what Chelios did before. You control the game as a defenseman. It's a role. First of all, it's a position that takes longer to learn to play, to be experienced, to be feared. And by the way, Chelios is feared. He was a lumberjack. Baby, you were in danger. There were some Bruins-Canadians games when he was playing for the Canadians that you couldn't find an inch of ice in either team's slot. And they would chop you if you did. And Chelios was a lumberjack. So Chelios did more things than Kane does. And what Kane does is spectacular. But that's why I'm going with Chelios. Something else about Chelios. When he was a captain, he was always there. After the game, good, bad, whatever, he answered questions. He viewed that as an important part of being a captain. He would answer them honestly. And there was one time, this is for a guy who answers all the questions, this is the story I remember. The Hawks weren't doing well. They had a bad game, and everybody's going to go talk to the captain. And before we could ask a question, Chris Chelios says, write what you want, I'll say I said it. Write what you want, I'll say I said it.
Did you take advantage of that?
Yeah, but we were, you know, whatever he was going to say, whatever it was, I don't know what. I may have just written that. That's how bad it was. Chris Chelios would swear to anything we were to write, and nobody would question it. So I covered a Canadians game in the 80s in Los Angeles. I was stringing for a radio station in Kings, Canadians. Chelios' parents lived in San Diego, and they come up for the game. And in the Forum in those days, there was the main hallway was where they put the skate sharpener and the torches. So you could, everybody was playing with their stick, taping it, shaping it, molding it, whatever you're doing. So I always hang out in the hallway. You never know who you're going to see, who you're going to talk to. Chelios is there with the Canadians, Lake in the DN. And I said, hey, your dad came into the press lounge. And Chelios immediately says, you can't let him do that. I said, well, we did. He goes, he'll take over a room. I said, yeah, he did. Chelios' first instinct was to protect us from his father because he knew the way his father was going to come in and take over a room and just own the place. And his dad was a stitch. It was great. So another thing, Chelios played for the Canadians team that won a cup. He played for Lake Canadian, and they won a cup in 86. A couple after the Olympics didn't go his way in 84. And he played alongside, among other players, Larry Robinson. Big Bird. Love Big Bird. That was his nickname. He would go on to coach the Kings. One time there's a road trip we take to Los Angeles. Robinson's a coach. And the Hawks, Mike Keenan would play Chelios 30, 35 minutes a game because that's what he did with those defensemen. That's how he rode those defensemen, whether you're Mark Howe, Chris Chelios, Brian Leetch. That's what you did. You got a big gun, shoot it. That's what he did with his guys. So Robinson is, we're asking him about the Kings, and he asks, he goes, how much is Chelly playing? And Tim Sassone says, well, they tell us like 26, 27 minutes. And Robinson says, is that Canadian? Talking about the exchange rate. It was just a great line. Just a great line. Another thing about Chelios, I visited his basement. Did a big story on him. I visited his basement. His basement was a dressing room. It was an NHL dressing room. That's the way it was set up, with stalls all around. It was filled with sweaters. He loved the game. He loved his opponents. He loved his teammates. He loved sweaters. He loved all of, I don't want to say all the swag, but the sweaters that guys wore. Here's how much he loved the game, players, sweaters. He stole Ray Bourque's jersey. In the old days in the stadium, kids, ask your parents, both teams had to share the same washing machine and dryer. And it was close. It was just off the Hawks dressing room. So the Bruins are in town and they're washing the jerseys. And Chelios sees it and he loved Ray Bourque. They played against each other a lot. He loved Ray Bourque. And who wouldn't? If you were a defenseman that you wanted to be Ray Bourque, he could play any kind of game you wanted. He could skate. He could hit. He could move the puck. He's Ray Bourque. Chelios reached into the, either I don't know if it was a washing machine or the dryer, but he took the jersey and took it home with him. He stole Ray Bourque's jersey. And that was the truth, he told me. So he'll, part of what will happen before tomorrow's ceremonies will be a some kind of panel that includes our guest, Jeremy Roenick from last hour, and Dennis Savard, for whom Chelios was traded. What a thing. You don't know until you hear, till you talk to French-Canadian players about playing hockey in Montreal. But you can talk to an American like Chelios and find out how ugly it could get. Chelios was named co-captain with Guy Carbonneau. He became the first non-Canadian to be some kind of captain for Les Canadiens, for the Montreal Canadiens, and the Quebecois didn't like it when the English pig dogs were given letters. And it became more acute when Chelios was traded because the provincial wars just exploded. And here's how intense it is. If you think that Justin Fields, you don't know how many Canadians would have unfollowed the team and all the media on Instagram the way Justin Fields did. Whatever you think of the intensity with which people look at the Bears and cover the Bears and talk about the Bears and get emotionally wrought about the Bears, I would say an exponent of 10 in Montreal if you're a Canadian. Dennis Savard told a story that he went from practice to taking his little girl to a McDonald's. And it was written up in the paper the next day about how he was, how the happy meal that he had. This is Pat Burns, the late Pat Burns, former coach of the Canadiens and the Leafs, as it turns out. I went up there to do a story on him. And I'm in a post game and he's answering questions from some French reporters. There's a pause. I want to ask my questions. And Burns, the former cop, looks at me and says, I answer the questions in French first, then English. Wow. He said he used to go to Cottage after the season, and he'd go on holiday at Cottage. They drop their articles. There's no A's or these. The people would come by in his boat. Burns, you suck. That's the story he would tell. I haven't seen it, but I would expect Gary Suter to be there tomorrow. And here's why. There were teammates in Wisconsin. They were friends. Chelios once said about Suter coming to the Blackhawks and Tony Amonte coming to the Blackhawks. He says, I got my trade and JR got his trade. Their best buddies were on the team. Gary Suter is a brother of the late Bob Suter. Bob Suter was one of the 1980 Olympians. He was a member of the Miracle on Ice team. Passed away a couple years ago. Gary wasn't allowed to watch the game, even on its delayed broadcast. He was at Culver Military Academy in Indiana. He was a freshman. I believe he was a freshman. No TV rights. Sorry, no TV rights. He had to hear about his brother's team's exploits from other students who did have the ability to watch TV, who did have that privilege. And imagine your brother's playing on that team. The greatest moment in sports history, you can't watch it. And by the way, I will not be taking questions on the greatest moment in sports history. And I mentioned this before. I'll come back to it. If the Hawks are retiring, Chris Chelios is number 7. Why not Brent Seabrooks? Now, the Cubs retired 31 twice, right? Fergie and Maddox. Brent Seabrook was on 3 Stanley Cup champions. If you're counting, Chelios wasn't. I don't know if Brent Seabrook is a Hall of Famer. I know Chelly is. I know what Brent Seabrook meant to this team. He was, in a way, the sergeant at arms. He was, in a way, Mark Messier to whatever Hawks Wayne Gretzky's there were. Messier was in. Seabrook was the guy who got into the penalty box and into Jonathan Toews' face. Stop this crap. We've got games to win. We've got a series to win. Cut it out when after Toews had taken some penalties, uncharacteristically. That was Brent Seabrook, 3 Stanley Cup champions, a warrior. Now, unfortunately, the Hawks signed him to a contract that made him look bad, made the Hawks look bad. He overstayed his welcome. But doesn't that guy get his number retired? Right, take a break. We come back. Stuff. Because that's what we do here on Saturday Suckage. I suck so you don't have to. Steve Rosen, top of the hour, we're talking Slapshot with a guy who wrote the book. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
There's something important I was supposed to do today.
Dopest dope I've ever smoked. Hands down, dopest dope I've ever smoked.
Wake and Bake Club.
I love weed.
I smoke weed every second of every day.
Hey, I am your stoner.
Even Smokey the Bear is going, only you can. I knew this.
We're so high right now.
We're not low.
Open up the door, it's Dave.
Who?
Dave, D-A-V-E. Will you open up the door? Yeah, Dave.
Dave?
Right, man. Dave, now will you open up the door?
Dave's not here.
Oh. Hey. Smoke weed every day.
I had the flu one time. Did a gummy bear. I was like breakfast at Bernie's, you know, the dead guy.
Yeah.
I was supposed to go to a party. And I went to the party, and they sat me in a chair, and people got sat beside me, took pictures, and I'm sitting there like breakfast at Bernie's.
Smoke weed every day.
WB Club, real quick, I screwed up. It's a Saturday Suckage. I suck so you don't have to. And here's an example. When I was talking with Speak, I was talking about WB Club's next question, your blunt rotation. Who's in your blunt rotation? She was on podcast with Jon Favreau, not the actor, the former speechwriter for Obama, and he gave a list of names and included Snoop, which I thought Elizabeth Warren had chosen, which was a great idea. She chose The Rock, all 4 sessions. He said, okay, you got four sessions. Who's in your blunt rotation? Like Obama, Biden, Kamala Harris, Schumer, you know, Mitch McConnell, whatever it was. And Snoop Dogg and The Rock were there. And she goes, no, I'm just taking The Rock 4 times. So I needed to correct that. 773 texter, weed rotation, number 1, Snoop Dogg, number 2, the Bong Appetite guy, I'm sorry. Ever see his pantry? No, I haven't. 3, recently added Jim McMahon, running for president in the Cannabis Party. Trash Panda, y'all remember him. He preceded, among other things, Robbie Triano as producer of the show. Trash Panda tweeted me a picture of he visited a local dispensary, and there was Jim McMahon's jersey and a signed football. Cannabis saved my life. And it's in a dispensary in one of the glass cases, and it looks like a museum piece, and it probably is. And it was the Curaleaf in Skokie. And I said, that's Trash Panda making a play. That's what it is. That's Trash Panda making a play. And he was on with Parkinson Spiegel as the cannabis candidate, and I don't think there's any other choice. That's it. So anyways, that was your blunt rotation. That was your Wake and Bake Club update and correction. We're gonna take a break. Next, Honda Chief owns Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Smoke weed every day.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
There's something important I was supposed to do today.
Dopest dope I've ever smoked. Hands down, dopest dope I've ever smoked.
We can make club.
I love weed.
I smoke weed every second of every day.
Hey, I am your stoner.
Even Smokey the Bear is going, only you can. I knew this.
We're so high right now.
Hello. Open up the door, it's Dave.
Who?
Dave, D-A-V-E, will you open up the door? Yeah, Dave.
Dave?
Right, man, Dave. Now, will you open up the door?
Dave's not here.
Oh. Hey, 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 hey. Smoke weed every day.
I had the flu one time. Did a gummy bear. I was like breakfast at Bernie's, you know, the dead guy.
Yeah.
I was supposed to go to a party, and I went to the party, and they sat me in a chair, and people got sat beside me, took pictures, and I'm sitting there like breakfast at Bernie's.
Smoke weed every day.
WB Club, real quick, I screwed up. It's a Saturday suckage. I suck so you don't have to. And here's an example. When I was talking with Speak, I was talking about WB Club's next question, your blunt rotation. Who's in your blunt rotation? She was on podcast with Jon Favreau, not the actor, the former speechwriter for Obama. And he gave a list of names and included Snoop, which I thought Elizabeth Warren had chosen, which was a great idea. She chose The Rock, all four sessions. He said, okay, you got four sessions. Who's in your blunt rotation? Like Obama, Biden, Kamala Harris, Schumer, you know, Mitch McConnell, whatever it was. And Snoop Dogg and The Rock were there. And she goes, no, I'm just taking The Rock four times. So I needed to correct that. 773 texter, weed rotation, number one, Snoop Dogg. Number two, the bong appetite guy. I'm sorry. Ever see his pantry? No, I haven't. Three, recently added Jim McMahon running for president in the Cannabis Party. Trash Panda, you all remember him. He preceded, among other things, Robbie Triano as producer of the show. Trash Panda tweeted me a picture of, he visited a local dispensary, and there was Jim McMahon's jersey and a signed football. Cannabis saved my life. And it's in a dispensary in one of the glass cases, and it looks like a museum piece, and it probably is. And it was the Curaleaf in Skokie. And I said, that's Trash Panda making a play. That's what it is. That's Trash Panda making a play. And he was on with Parkins and Spiegel as a cannabis candidate. And I don't think there's any other choice. That's it. So anyways, that was your blunt rotation. That was your Wake and Bake Club update and correction. We're going to take a break. Next, Wanda Chief owns Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Smoke weed every day.